Still Standing is a podcast of hope. My name is Allie Patterson, and I am your host. On this podcast, you're going to hear stories from people who have encountered a living God and found help and hope in their real life. No matter what your life is like right now or what you think of God, I hope you hear stories like yours, and I hope you walk away thinking there's hope for me too. Everyone on this podcast would gladly say it's because of Jesus that I am still standing. Come find out why. Okay, everyone, today we are covering a topic that I really believe we need hope for. I always talk about this podcast being a podcast of hope, and October is National Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month. So I thought this is the perfect time to do this episode. I don't know if you know this, but one in four pregnancies ends in loss. I myself have had one experience with miscarriage as well, and chances are pretty high that if you're a woman listening, you have either experienced this yourself or you know someone pretty close to you that has. Yet, honestly, nobody really talks about this. I mean, maybe your best friend, maybe your mom or your sister. There's so much silence around this topic that you might not even know that your very close friends just went through a loss. I know many of mine did not know at the time. And I just think following a loss, we don't tend to talk about it because there's just a huge amount and a huge variety of emotions, anything from shame and anger to guilt, despair, uncertainty about the future, all kinds of fear. So today we're going to break the silence a little bit and we're going to talk about how you go on after this kind of loss. How do you find hope in the middle of feeling that sort of grief? And today really we're talking about how to stay standing after the loss of your baby. But I promise if you hang in there with us through this episode, our guest today is going to bring you all the way back to hope. Her name is Rachel Lohman. Rachel had a painful start to parenthood. She lost her first baby to miscarriage, and she's recently released a book called Miscarried Hope. There you are. It's baked right into the title. It's a guarantee. We're going there today. But first, we're going to talk about research findings from all kinds of things that Rachel has really done a deep dive on in order to guide moms out there back to hope. She's a pastor, writer, mom. She wants to bring you hope. So welcome, Rachel, to Still Standing. Thank you so much for being with me.
Thanks for having me, Allie.
I always start off by asking my guests a fun question.
Great. I'm curious.
I know that sometimes it just takes a lot to get out of bed in the morning, face your day, face your week. So I like to know what's something that puts your feet on the ground in a good way, wakes you up, and keeps you standing when you face a new day or a new week.
It's the fact that my son's a kindergartner and his school takes the attendance policy very seriously. We found that out the hard way when we went camping for 3 days and then got a letter that, you know, we had it approved by the teacher, but I guess it still counts as an unexcused absence. Who knew? A family camping trip, getting submerged in nature is not educational. We think it is. Anyway, that's a sidebar. So now I'm like, I have to get out of bed.
Get out of bed and get your kid to school.
Every day, because we are one unexcused absence or tardy away from getting a letter from the district. And this is how we've started kindergarten. So,
oh my. Well,
yeah.
Give us a little background on who you are. And I know you started off motherhood with a loss. So just kind of put us in, who are you? Where are you right now? And how did you kind of get from that early loss to sitting here with me today? Mm-hmm. Just give us a little background on that.
I think a theme when I look back on my life, and especially the seasons of losses, I have always been fueled by discovering hope, helping other women find hope in those really broken chapters of our story. And I felt drawn to this before I started walking through a decade of a lot of brokenness and pain and crushed dreams in various capacities, which really characterized my 20s, miscarriage being one of those. But that wasn't my first traumatic experience with loss. My parents divorced pretty suddenly right when I graduated from college. I had a few crushing career dreams. I mean, just different varieties of types of loss that opened my eyes to grief. And then Yes, my journey to motherhood started with loss. And I think what stung so much about that was it was our first pregnancy. So we're just swimming in all the naivety, the excitement, the mm-hmm. innocence. Mm-hmm. Nobody in my family or friend circle that I knew of had experienced pregnancy or infant loss. So really, it was just a statistic that lived like out there in the world. And not that it would have softened the blow if I had it more on my radar, mm-hmm. but it just came so out of left field that it was really blindsiding. And nothing has made me do the deep work of wrestling out hope and the goodness of God and all of these questions mm-hmm. for the first time, like losing a baby did.
Can I ask you to be specific about the stage of pregnancy of your loss?
Sure. Yeah, I was 7.5 weeks okay. along, so it was an early loss.
When I had a miscarriage, it was probably between 6 and 7 weeks. So it was early. Mm-hmm. And I found the reason that I asked you that is that I found that as I tried to process it, even the nurse at my doctor's office was extremely dismissive mm-hmm. Of the loss because it was on the early side. So that's why I asked, because I think that that, for me, it added to the difficulty of knowing how to process it. It made me feel like I didn't deserve to feel a sense of loss because other people yeah. didn't seem to think it was worth that. Mm-hmm. So that was very confusing to me. I mean, I remember being on the phone with the nurse and thinking to myself, why is she talking to me as though this is not a big deal? Mm. And she wasn't uncaring exactly. I understand she deals with it all the time, but to me, it hit me in the face as a huge loss. And to her, because of the early stage that the pregnancy was at,
right?
The clear message I got was, oh, well. Mm-hmm. And that made the processing of it a lot harder. So I was curious just what your specific experience was like.
I hate that was part of your experience. I felt some of that too. I also think that is so helpful that you named that, because so many women, most miscarriages are going to occur kind of in our time range mm-hmm. Of pregnancy. So many women feel that, mm-hmm. whether it's from medical providers or just family and friends who don't really, they don't know how to address this type of loss or grief. And so they say, oh, well, you know, at least you weren't pregnant for that long. At least you know you can get pregnant. They say all of these things, which is very confusing, mm-hmm. as you mentioned. You're already trying to reconcile, like, how do I miss and grieve this child that I feel so connected to or mm-hmm. loved so much and miss so dearly when I've never held them, never met them, never will. Like, it is such a complex type of loss.
I remember, I still remember in some ways even more sharply telling my husband about that pregnancy. Mm-hmm. It was between my second and third. And I kept, you know, you keep little mementos from mm-hmm. pregnancies, and I would save little things. And I already had like a little box that I had put some other things from my other children in. And I remember I had like wrapped it up, like the pregnancy test up. Mm-hmm. Is that weird? Wrap up?
No, I saved it too. Like, and then I'm
wrap
like,
up a stick that I peed on to celebrate something seems a little weird, but I think most women who have had children understand that. Yeah. And it had this little gold, it was like a bendable bow that had little gold stars on it. And I remember it very specifically because it was how I like wrapped it up to kind of celebrate telling my husband. And I remember finding it a couple weeks later going, I don't know what to do with this. What do I do with this now? And that was probably just a good, I think I remember that little object and the physical reminder because I didn't know what to do with it. And I think that's why I care about this topic for women, because it's just, it just slips. It's like something slips through your fingers, but you're still standing there holding it and you don't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. And I know that any woman that I have eventually at some point talked about her own loss with, I think has some of those feelings. Like other people don't feel this loss or can't see it in the same way that I could. We're never attached to it in the same way I was, whether that mm-hmm. was for 2 weeks or 6 months, you know, or whatever. But I do think we need help knowing how to get all the way through that, back to hope, especially when it's something other people can't. They barely are able to acknowledge it with you.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So what did you find in the research for your book? I'm curious, you know, because I didn't talk about that loss with very many people, I have no idea. Like, is everything mm-hmm. I said to you normal? Or did I have some bizarre experience that no one else had? Because we don't talk about it. What did you find as you talked to and researched this topic for your book?
Yeah, I would say the things that you're sharing about your experience are very common, Sally, where women feel that their loss or their grief really is invalidated. Mm-hmm. And people don't understand as months and years go by, or they still post about their baby, you know, at the year mark or the 2 year mark or on the anniversary of the due date, whatever it is. I've had people tell me, like, yeah, my family says, when are you going to get over it? When are you going to move on? And I think it just really highlights where we are as a society. Well, A, Western culture is not great at grief in general, but then B, if you go to a type of loss or a type of grief that is outside of the traditional norm, where we don't have things like physical mementos, like you were talking about, we don't have photographs and memories. And for many of us, especially miscarriage moms who lose their baby earlier term, you know, our social grieving norms, like a funeral, a headstone, a place to return and lay flowers or mm-hmm. sit in the memory of your baby, those don't apply to us. Mm-hmm. So it can be very confusing and complex. In terms of the research, an overwhelming amount of the 400 women I surveyed, 84% of them, and I think a lot of this results from the factors we just named, feel some degree of shame surrounding their loss. And 76% of lost moms blame themselves for their baby dying.
Wow. For what reason?
Yeah.
That they could have behaved in a way that would have preserved that life, or that they did something to cause it? What?
Yeah, a lot of them, and I was in this place for a while. Actually, there's some fascinating research by a neuroscientist on this by the name of Robert Burton. He says that when we have ambiguity in a storyline, something that's happened to us in our brain, and we don't know the reason why the event happened, especially if it's traumatic, that the brain looks for like a familiar story to fill in the sequence, because it likes to file things away like a pattern. Mm-hmm. It recognizes stories as patterns with a beginning, middle, and end. So if you're able to plug in a tape of like, okay, for most of my life, the good things that have been taken away from me have been because I've messed up in God's eyes. I haven't been good enough. Whatever that tape that you play in your shame cycle, that is often what we fill in the blank with here, because it's how the brain makes sense. It's how it completes the pattern and can store it away then. And so for a lot of women, they don't necessarily have a clear-cut reason why they blame themselves. It's more just like this default subconscious processing that's happening in their brain. They say, I'm not getting an answer medically, because most of us don't. God sometimes seems silent, or maybe altogether silent, around this loss. And then nobody's talking about it or resourcing me. So when left to my own devices, I'm going to internalize this and
just gonna
give myself a reason why.
Yep.
Yeah.
I must have, because we do see a lot of cause and effect with our own behavior. So,
exactly.
I mean, it makes sense that a lot of women would fill it in that way. Pregnant women are often given a list of do this or don't do this. Mm-hmm. And so I can very deeply sympathize and understand with women who would blame themselves. So I see that as a small blessing, I guess, in my story. I didn't do a downward spiral of that.
Hmm.
You obviously went on to have, you mentioned a kindergartner.
Yes.
So you have a child.
And, yes, I have two living children.
Two living children. Did you ever ask God, and did you find other women who were people of faith or who acknowledged the existence of a God? I would ask him, do I get to meet this baby? Will I get to know this child someday? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is this child with you? And when I'm with you, will I get to know them? I found myself wondering that a lot. And I think, you know, we only have some sketchy outline that the Lord has allowed us about what happens, you know, when we die. Mm-hmm. And so that, mm-hmm. Under any circumstances, leaves all of us with some question marks. And so I certainly found myself asking those questions because it drove me back to, well, this was a life to you, Lord, right? This mm-hmm. was a created child. And so does that mean I get to meet them? You know, and mm-hmm. I just found myself going all the way to that place and just being left in the middle of those no answers, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Hope. Yeah, there's a hope for that. I find myself in that place a lot and thinking, I lean on the side of expecting to meet my baby mm-hmm. with Jesus. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you said, there's, you know, none of us have been there before.
Right. So. how did you engage God in the middle of that grief in your own life? What did that look like for you?
It was pretty messy, actually. And I found myself in a unique tension because I was pastoring on staff at a local church. My husband and I both were associate pastors. And I felt, I wouldn't say hypocritical, but just like there was this big inner tension within me. I remember like sitting with a high school girl who had an abortion the week that I lost my baby and mm-hmm. wanting the reassurance that God was with her. And I'm just thinking like, yeah, I'm wanting that reassurance too. Mm-hmm. So it was a very unique season. What it looked like for me was, thank goodness, I was already seeing a therapist ahead of time because she ended up being such a key piece to my healing. I didn't know that loss had been part of her story, but she had multiple losses. She also was a pastor, and she was just so helpful to be a safe place for me to process. And she was a mom of living teenagers. So she was on the other side of it quite a few years removed and had a perspective on how it shaped her motherhood, how it shaped her hope, how it changed the way that she saw the goodness of God unattached from circumstances, mm-hmm. which I think my loss really exposed a lot of that for me. Like I knew cognitively that God's goodness isn't circumstantial and it's not attached to that. And 1 + 1 with my actions doesn't always equal 2. Like I think mm-hmm. it's going to in God's economy, but just being raised in such an achievement-based culture, I don't know. I think more of that was ingrained in me than what I realized. So I thought, okay, God, like I'm doing all the right things. We're serving you.
Yeah.
We're incorporating you, you know, we're doing things the right way, you know. Of course, like you would bless us with children when we're ready. And so I had to unpack all of that. Mm-hmm. And it took me a while to get there with God. It just felt like kind of a wrestling match that I never asked to participate in.
What kind of took you from your own loss to the point where you wanted to engage the lives of other women? Obviously, you noticed what I've noticed, which is we're very silent. We sometimes carry fear of another loss for a really long time.
Absolutely.
Because we don't get the chance. We don't know how to engage this topic with even some of the closest people in our life. It tends to linger for mothers longer than it does for probably anybody else around the loss. So tell us, how did you come to the point where you were like, that's it. I'm going to do this. This is important in the lives of other women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it took me a few years. It wasn't one of those things where I was like, okay, I'm 6 months out of this loss. I'm ready to do something with it. But I did feel this nudge early on to talk about it. And so about a month out of our miscarriage, I did share about it on social media. And that was such a cathartic feeling just to be like, you know, when you, it's like that tension lifts of here's what we're really going through and we're going to be honest about it mm-hmm. so that we don't have to just smile and wave with, you know, the fake smile on because
yeah.
there's not time in real life, you know, when you're passing people by to always say, here's what I'm really going through. Mm-hmm. And then a few times it came out when I was speaking, the response that I would get each time was just like all these women in my life coming out of the woodwork. And it led to such a beautiful, deep conversations about how we cling to God in times of suffering and pain and things we don't understand and how he sees us through. So really these beautiful moments. And then years went by, I just sat on that. I thought, someday I think I'd like to write a resource on this topic because when I went through it, there were some, you know, great resources available, but I was still longing for something that really like took me deeper theologically and gave me space and parameters and kind of a framework to ask God what felt like kind of scary questions to be asking mm-hmm. because I hadn't asked him in my life before. So that sat with me. And then completely unconnected, I thought in my mind, when I was pregnant with my daughter, Eden, I just wanted a hobby. I know when you're like in your 30s, you have to quest for hobbies. I guess yes. they're not part of your life naturally anymore. Isn't that depressing?
Oh my gosh, I'm going to do a hobby episode. You
I was
are
Googling,
so right.
Like
they're
hobbies
so
that
and we don't
are
have them anymore.
Affordable. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We don't have them. And I was working remotely. And so I'm just like on the computer all day. I'm like, I need to do something tactile and creative. So I was like, I'm going to make earrings, clay earrings. I used to love making jewelry and I was a kid growing up. I had a little craft studio in my parents' basement. And yeah, I just started making earrings out of clay on our kitchen counter. And it was just fun for me. And I literally said, I'm never going to sell these so I can remove any and all pressure about how they look. Mm-hmm. Cool. Then a couple months go by and I think I posted something about like, oh, look at my little hobby on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And then a friend from high school was like, can I buy those from you? And I just thought it was funny because I was like, wow, that's the thing I said I wasn't going to do. Sure, you can. You can buy these. And I just started selling them then. One thing led to another. And then after I had my daughter, Eden, I thought, okay, God, here's where I need to give up my new fun hobby so that I can get serious about writing. And I'll focus my extra 45 minutes a day on writing instead of crafting.
A whole 45 minutes?
A whole 45.
Wow.
It's generous. It's generous. Postpartum, just excess time. It's thriving. And yeah, I remember in my quiet time one morning, God was like, it's not always giving up the fun thing or the life-giving thing to do the hard thing. And he was like showing me this bridge between the earrings being a conduit to tell lost mom stories and that the book would come out of that naturally. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened years later. So I decided to launch what I called Hope Again Collective. And because so few women have a physical memento to remember their baby, mm-hmm. Every earring that I make is named after a lost mom who sends in her story mm-hmm. on my website. So that she has something to hold on to and remember her baby with. Her family and friends can buy it and wear it and show a physical sign of their support for her.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
Yeah, and so it just, I'm not that like smart at marketing or creative. Like God just like one thing, one thing, one thing. And yeah, 300 women now have shared their story with me, lost moms. And out of that, the book very naturally came because mm-hmm. I'm living in these stories. I'm seeing these themes. I'm seeing this quest for hope, even amongst women who don't follow Jesus or mm-hmm. claim to want nothing to do with him. There's still this gravitation towards like wanting to find some meaning, purpose, redemption, hope, really.
Yeah. I mean, we're wired for it, right?
Like exactly.
When you said earlier about us filling in the blanks because we're yearning for a story. Like there's yeah. we are somehow hardwired for the story of God, mm-hmm. you know? And again, that yearning for hope, for redemption, for purpose, that's another part of the story. Like, amen. It's another yeah. aspect of the fact that we yearn for the right conclusion to this story. And the right conclusion is and will be given. And so the obedience, being connected to God and obedient, trumps strategy and marketing every day of the week.
It does.
Connection and obedience over strategy and marketing. I mean, period. Yeah. And I have to like, I am a former marketing professional.
Hear it from the source, people.
I'm telling you, we can't make up a better story than what God wants to tell with our life. And so, exactly. you know, as we connect to him and are obedient to those little things, they turn into these amazing moments where you thought, you were just making earrings because, you know, you had 40 minutes of free time and look what, you know, look where it led you a few steps later, which was mm-hmm. so cool. And what a wonderful, I just have to celebrate the way God does that because that's so cool. He was driving you towards something that was deeply fun and satisfying for you.
I know.
And it became the bridge to something that was very needed in the lives of other people. That's so cool. I mean, that's like a win-win-win.
Yeah, you know? And I should say, like, I first pitched my a different proposal when I was 24. And this book got published when I was 35. So, I mean, for various reasons, I went to seminary and then had to figure out what I really believed and, you know, got married and life, all this stuff. But when I look back, I'm like, man, I did try to force it. Mm-hmm. I tried to write. I tried to, you know, I just had no idea what God would want me to write about later, that this would be the story, that it would require pain. Yeah, it was in this quiet, unforced timing that, yeah, it was totally not my doing. And I didn't do it that way to begin with.
I do think sometimes we get a sense of what God can do or might do or will do. There's a sense of promise. Mm. Mm. And it's really tempting to try to push something out.
That's a good word.
But I do believe even our bumbling mistakes are like, they're beautiful because you were feeling a sense of promise over your life that you know, there was something intended for you. And yeah, I'm sure there were hard lessons in the like, yeah, you tried to force it. I've done that. We've all done that. But what a cool recognition that, yeah, the Lord had this promise over your life for like a decade or more before, and he was always going to bring it about. You're like a Jacob. You had to go wrestle alongside of him and try to make it happen for a hot minute. And then he was like, I told you all along I was going to do this because it's a promise over you. But if you want to wrestle me in the meantime, okay, but we're still going to get there. So
I love that perspective.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, that's really, it's just a beautiful aspect of what you're saying, because I think it's just true to how God behaves with a lot of us that feel like we have to help him out. And I certainly have been there many times myself. But I still think there's a little part of him that's like, hey, Rachel, good job seeing that, that I have a promise over you. So
yeah,
I don't really need your help though. I mean, not in that way, but thumbs up on the recognition. That's great. So tell us, were there any other interesting themes as you put the book together that we haven't hit on that you really feel like would bring hope into people's lives just hearing, hey, you're not alone in that? What were anything we haven't talked about that you feel would be comforting and encouraging to people out there who have suffered a loss and are thinking that little thing is maybe just me?
One of the most unlocking pieces that God showed me in my writing process was I had never looked at the emotional, really the grief hope experience that Jesus and his disciples have during Holy Week. I had just always, like, Holy Week was just historical to me. Like, okay, here's Palm Sunday. Here's what we do. Here's Good Friday. Here's, you know, and it wasn't until I was writing this that I saw the parallels between what Jesus and the disciples go through and what we as lost moms especially go through. But I think a lot of this applies to just loss and grief in general. So I developed like a five stages of hope as a framework that come out of Holy Week. I'll walk you through them real quickly because it's really the backbone of Miscarried Hope. So we start with the expectation, which is this heightened peak of human emotion. That's Palm Sunday. That's when everybody's like, this is really happening. Mm-hmm. Jesus is here. He's our Messiah. Finally, the fulfillment of our long-awaited hope. When you're a loss mom, well, when you're before you have your loss, the expectation stage is when you're holding that positive pregnancy stick and you're thinking, oh my gosh, like this dream, whether I've waited for this for 5 years or 5 weeks, whatever, it's really happening. So we have this high expectation moment. And then we move into the second stage, which is this plummet into shock. Just a few days later, Jesus moves his disciples around the table and he's like, hey, I'm actually going to be leaving you guys in a few days. For a lost mom, that's when the first signs of something wrong with her pregnancy begin to show up. And just like the disciples, we often, you know, live in this veil of disbelief, like, no, like you're not leaving. You're the Messiah. You're not, Messiahs don't leave. They don't die. And we're thinking, okay. I mean, I remember for me, well, maybe the bleeding will stop. You know, maybe this is going to go away. Maybe it's just spotting. Maybe it's going to be okay. Then they move into despair, which is that Good Friday moment. It's the crucifixion. It's this feeling of God ultimately forsaking us, or it feels like that in the moment. That's the point of realizing that death has become a part of your baby's story, whenever that reality hits. And then it's followed up by grief, which is what we see on Silent Saturday. For lost moms, this is often, I think, the longest period in the stages of recovering hope, because it's silent for various reasons. Oftentimes, God feels silent. Our family and friends feel silent. The culture around us feels silent towards pregnancy and infant loss. They don't know what to do with this loss. And we don't know. Many of us are walking into unfamiliar territory, just like the first followers of Jesus. They had no idea that the story was going to change in a short amount of time. Mm-hmm. And I think we lose sight of that on this side of history. And then we move into the final stage, which is active hope. It's living in this place because hope never really leaves us. Like biblical hope, you know, that is not trumped out by any circumstance. But when you go through a loss, it often feels like the sensation of hope, like that optimism, whatever you associate with hope, that feels like it's left the scene. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was guilty of realizing. Like, that's what I thought hope was all this time. But active hope is so much deeper. It's this sense of like, we know how the story ends now. I know that death no longer has the final word in my baby's story. And that changes everything about the way that I process this loss. Yes, I'm still very much going to be in grief, miss my child, long to see my child, have questions, all of that. So it doesn't numb the pain or put a Band-Aid over it. But when you know the way that the story ends, and if it ends with this resurrection hope that has been tested and it's defeated death already, and that becomes the last word of your baby's story, I just feel like that propels us into living with an active hope. Mm-hmm. That changes the way we grieve.
And yes, I mean, that's such a beautiful, beautiful picture of it. And you're right. I've never seen Holy Week in that way. And it always drives you back to, I want that ending.
Yes.
I love it. I love it. What could we do as we know someone well? Gosh, that's a tricky question because so many of us don't talk about it, right?
Right.
So first, talk to moms that are, will, or have ever experienced loss. And what can we do? And then if you're the friend of someone that you know, is or has suffered a loss, what's the first thing in each case that you would tell those Sure. people to do?
Yeah, if you're a mom who has experienced this type of loss, and I'll speak to you specifically if you're in the category of you haven't talked about it, but you're holding some pain or feeling like family and friends have betrayed you because they haven't supported you. I've been guilty of this, and feeling like the year mark of when we lost our baby, I wanted people to reach out and remember or send me a text. But then catching myself and realizing, well, yeah, I've never asked for that. I've never specifically said, hey, this would mean a lot if you come alongside me in this way. Now, I know a lot of people will say like it shouldn't be the responsibility of the griever to initiate what they need. But what I've learned is that oftentimes people are wanting to come alongside you. They are wanting to support you. But when it's an issue like this that they may not have experienced themselves and they are afraid of saying the wrong thing, doing the wrong thing, sometimes they need a little bit of pointing in the right direction. So what I did the second year then was I sent a text to, you know, people close to me. And I said, hey, this is the date. If you could at least be thinking of us on this day, it would mean the world. And you might feel a little awkward asking for exactly what you need from somebody. Mm-hmm. I had to do this with my husband when we were first processing our loss because we process it very differently. But that has been one of the most helpful things I could do in terms of getting out of that place of holding resentment or what kind of feels like bitterness starting to accumulate in your heart because you're not receiving the support that you wanted to. But just saying, hey, okay, I'm gonna move out of that. I'm gonna say what I need. And most people are going to come alongside you. Mm-hmm. Sure. They just don't know what you need. So that might be a helpful place if that's where you're at. Maybe you're at the place of you just need to wrestle with God and keep talking this out with him. If you are a loved one of somebody who has gone through this type of loss, I would say keep checking in on them. If the loss is still within the first year, they'll need to know that you still love them, you still see them, you still care about them, think about them, you remember their child, you know, a month after the loss, 6 months after the loss, a year after the loss, mm-hmm. because they're still thinking about it and processing it. And this baby is still a part of their life and their story. And they want typically that baby to be remembered, that life to be remembered. Easy check-in points are like Mother's Day, Christmas, the due date, the anniversary of their loss. It's as simple as sending a text like, hey, I'm thinking of you and your baby today. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really need to be more than that, but that is such a profound way of letting a lost mom know that you see her invisible pain that she carries.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for that. I would love to be able to give a copy of your book to every mom that's going to hear this. Hopefully, if you know somebody who could be encouraged by this episode, you'll share it. But I also want them to know how to get a hold of your book because I do think it sounds like just an incredibly helpful resource for potential moms that you will know in the future. I mean, that go through a loss. So why don't you tell us how do people find you, interact with you, find your book, et cetera?
Sure. You can find all of that on my website, rachellohman.com. And there I have links to my book, to Hope Again Collective. And you can also find my book, Miscarried Hope, on Amazon.
And we can find all your earrings too at Hope Again Collective.
Yes. HopeAgainCollective.com.
So fun. So fun.
You can wear some hope on your ears, which is one of the best ways to wear hope, yeah, in my opinion.
For sure. For sure. Well, thank you so much for being with us. Thanks for sharing your story and your processing and just the really kind of intimate places that you've been in your own heart and with God, because it helps us offer other people language and a way through. So thank you. Yeah. Thanks for the hope.
Thanks for making this space available, Allie.
Oh gosh, I'm happy to do it. And I hope I never know another lost mom, but I just might. And I'm happy to have something, you know, in hand that might bless them. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening. For all things Still Standing, head over to theallypatterson.com. You can find my new book, How to Stay Standing, as well as other resources, including articles, Bible studies, and all kinds of resources just for you. No matter where you listen to podcasts, would you leave us a rating? Maybe even a written review? It helps others find this podcast, and we want to help as many people as possible bring hope and courage into the middle of life storms. If you want to connect more with me, you can find me on Instagram or Facebook at The Allie Patterson. Still Standing is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio.